free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Hello and a very warm welcome from my side to our Mercury International podcast, Ganz einfach Vertrieb. This time it's in English. My name is Alex and I'm partner with Mercury here in Germany. And today we're talking about one thing every European sales leader feels right now. 2026 is going to be unpredictable. It's not going to be calm, but it can be navigated. And we're talking about a survey that we did asking around 300 sales leaders across Europe about their sentiments going into 2026. And two things stand out. Uncertainty is the norm, and we will talk a lot about the new normal. And success is not going to be about optimism, but success is going to be about execution. And that's exactly what the survey is about. We're calling it Sailing into 2026, Navigating Uncertainty. And the year, we're calling it what it is. 2026 is going to be the year of impact. Not the year of perfect forecasts, not the year of big strategy theaters, but the year where decisions actually show up in pipelines, in win rates, and in margins. To do that, I'm joined by my three wonderful friends and colleagues who bring a market lens to what the data is really telling us. So there's Paul, our managing director for Mercury in the UK, Charles, our managing director for Mercury in France, and Nick, our MD for Mercury in Benelux. And I'll try to bring in the German, Austrian, Swiss perspective. So what's the plan for today? We'll follow the story of the report from mood to targets, to external pressure, to strategic activities. And finally, we'll discuss what sales leaders need to do to turn their intentions into actual impacts. So let's do this. Paul, one sentence from your side. What's the headline for your market right now in the UK?
The headline for the UK is still very optimistic, on the basis, though, that last year wasn't as bad as predicted.
Not as bad as predicted sometimes is good. I'm also joined by our colleague Charles from France. We were just saying it seems that there is a disconnect for kind of, you know, sentiment and outlook and actual performance in 2025. How do you see that right now in France? What's the headline, if you will, for the French market going into 2026?
2 points are in the, very on a very regular basis discussed. The first is the uncertain feeling regarding the economical trend.
Yeah, nobody knows where it's going.
In France, there is a very local reason, which is that at the government level, for 18 months, we have no official budget, the budget for the government. And in that budget, there is all of the rules, regulation, and finance, especially to support the big companies.
Okay.
And it has an impact. I have an example with, these big firms.
Yeah.
They are waiting for some governmental finance or funds to push some initiative.
Yeah,
but nothing happened because this is frozen at the government level. This is the first point. The second is, especially for salespeople, the velocity in the decision-making process, especially in B2B. We have observed that for client, average mid-sized company, and more, the number of people involved in the decision-making process is increasing.
Yes.
And to reach the same level of revenue, when you have to sell the value instead of to support a client while buying a product, they need more time. What we measure today is 2.3 times the time you need before to sell the same level of revenue.
Yeah.
This is not my measurement. This is an average thanks to a couple of discussions I have had with clients. Then here are the two main reasons. There is one function which is much more under pressure compared to the other in every company. This is the procurement department. You know that in 2025, there is it was not the Times, but another paper which have run a survey about burnout in companies.
And it's procurement?
The procurement function are the first function in any companies touched by burnout, and the ratio is increasing much more.
And I think we can talk about that later when we talk about kind of external factors for our salespeople. But yeah, it's procurement you look to when it's about savings. And you know, savings is a thing. And then, you know, if we have to deal with these people, they're always understaffed and they don't have the time. And
The point is that, Alex, in fact, saving, to be honest, is not new for procurement people.
No, I know, but...
But the number of tasks...
Yes, exactly.
We have only 24 hours a day. For instance, when by the past we have some client with who we signed a contract for on a two-year basis, and now the procurement department is obliged to cut it into several
monthly,
of 20 or 25 key euros, you multiply by 2, 3, 4 the time requested to drive the task.
And in big
companies, this is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Charles, you talked about having no government or no government budget. That kind of is a good segue to Nick. I think in Belgium, you know how to work without a government, but it's not like that anymore.
We have a government now, and also in the Netherlands, they're going to have a government real soon. Well, what is interesting is that the Benelux sales leaders are the most optimistic ones of the bunch. Although they also, let's say, didn't hit their targets in 25, although I must say the vast majority is above 80% or even close to 90% of the budget. So that's certainly not dramatic. Yeah, what's the reason for that? Well, I think it's a pretty stable market for the moment due to the political issues. We don't have that heavy industry as you have a lot in Germany, like automotive. It's quite resilient market, I must say. It's also quite expert driven. We have large logistic hubs like the ports in Rotterdam and in Antwerp. And also, let's say, from a financial point of view, the market is pretty stable.
Yeah.
So you could say it's pretty stable. And people are rather optimistic. I'll not say very optimistic, although then we have a lot of worries, of course, like everybody with what is going on in the world. But it's a lot rather stable, I would say. Yes.
But a lot of your kind of big companies rely on world markets, don't they?
Yeah, it's a very export. It's the big companies are, well, not only the big companies, but it's a very export driven market. Yes.
And so with all the political turbulences in the world, with all the kind of the external factors going on in the world, I think, you know, it's always good when people are optimistic. The question is these false hopes, and I think that's what we're going to try to answer. So we've touched upon a lot of topics already. Kind of trying to structure it a little. So what we do, we will follow the structure of the survey, kind of going from the mood in the market to the pressures, the external factors that are being felt by our clients. What does that mean for strategic initiatives? What does it mean for, you know, which direction are our customers or companies going, and what does that mean for leadership? And all the time, what we're trying to do, obviously, is to avoid generic takes. We all encourage you to get your copy of the survey. We'll encourage you to read through that. But having these experts on the panel, obviously, I'd like to stick to what we're seeing with our clients, with our prospects, with in the actual markets. Charles, you wanted to raise a point.
Yeah, thank you, Alexander. I just want to react on the leadership. What we observe also is the lack of self-confidence of people.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in France, you know that when things are going wrong, the majority of people point out internal factor or external factor. This is human. I understand that. In France, perhaps the level is much higher compared to the other. The question is, who is on a daily basis in any companies the leader to drive and to challenge people about their own self-confidence? This is the first-line manager. But when you hear the first-line manager, who are very short-term monitored and managed by the top management, they have not the posture to maintain, to develop the self-confidence of their people.
And I think that's a very interesting point you bring up, and maybe that's one thing. So the people that we've asked, and thanks to everyone who's answered our survey, have been very much senior leadership people. But I think, Charles, you're raising an excellent point, and I've just had this discussion yesterday about, you know, how optimism, how strategy and how, you know, strategic initiatives actually cascade down to the people who have to do the work.
Yeah.
You know, your first line managers, your actual salespeople in the market, your account managers, your field sales reps. And I think that's gonna be a very interesting point to see in 2026 is, you know, it's okay to be optimistic on a kind of senior leadership level, but how do you enable, how do you empower these, as you said, Charles, the first line managers? How do you actually transfer that optimism, these ideas down to the people who have to execute? And
a good example is the sales manager. If we put the focus on the population we support more than the others on a daily basis, by the past, we have had, you know, some sales managers saying, you know, I do not know if I will be there in a couple of months. But today, this proportion of people is increasing.
Okay.
I do not say this is 90% of people, but when I hear some customer voices or some friends, not only thanks to my professional environment, but also in my private one, you meet some people and they say, I'm working in that company. It was great, blah, blah, blah. You know, they talk about the past and the way they pronounce their words is very important to feel the spirit. And in very often we hear, perhaps I will be not here in a couple of months or next year. I do not know because, you know, today this is difficult.
And it's a thing that Nick and Paul, you also brought up. It's that unpredictability. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
I also believe, Alex, that people got a bit used to it, I must say.
Yes, true.
Yeah, they got used to it. I mean, instability is maybe the new stability, I must say.
It's kind of the thing that is normal.
Not going to change is that it changes all the time. So that's at least what I send in the market is there is a lot of resilience in the market. People got used to it. They got more agile. They got sharper. And they are indeed, I believe, much more agile than before. Yeah. I think agility became a very important capability. And it's more also a focus. What I see with a lot of our customers is that indeed they focus much more on proactive approach of the market and segmentation than even before.
Yeah.
That is, if we talk with customers, we talk with people on C-level in sales, they say, well, there is really a need to enhance. I'm not saying they're not doing it, but even to enhance the proactivity level of our sales efforts and much more focused. Those are the two topics I see in our market: proactivity and more segmentation. Not going for anything, making the right, strategic decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, I don't know.
Sorry, Alexander, and sorry, Paul, but resilience is the word, Nick. Every year, I have one meeting with the president of the Resilience Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is, on the paper, this is a worldwide company, but in reality, this is like us. They are a European company. And he shared with me, you know, the highlights behind people who are resilient or not. Then if it's interesting you, I will just put the five key points as an outcome of the 2025 survey, and the link to the survey, but the survey is in French, sorry. But I can't push it because it's typically what Nick said about resilience.
Yeah, And I feel the same as well. And yeah, let's do that. And maybe we can put it in the show notes so that people can download it on the podcast. I don't know, Paul. I opened the results and I thought, you know, it feels like people are sick and tired of being pessimistic.
It's a good point, Alex. And part of it is the feeling that the senior leadership almost feel obliged to be optimistic because
yes.
they want to convey the message to their people. But I pick up on Nick's point about agility, about, you know, the disturbance in the market is the new norm. And therefore,
yeah.
in times like that, when things are changing, things are turbulent, employees in an organization look upwards. They look to their leaders to say, please give us direction. And I agree that the agility is essential. And companies have become better at it. What the pessimism element is really around the noise that's created, particularly in the UK from government through the media, indecision, and also the fact that political messages are trying to preempt any shock in the market. But actually, you know, UK business is pretty resilient, but they're resilient because they've seen it all before. You know, those of us that have been around a few years, you know, we've got through COVID, got through the financial crisis.
Yeah. Brexit in your case.
Absolutely. I wasn't going to mention Brexit, but as you've done it.
Well, we're on a European podcast here. So,
you know, we can't hide from the fact that economy is shrunk by around 4% due to Brexit. So what people have tried to do, particularly senior leaders, is to create an atmosphere of recognition that it's the new norm. We have to be agile. What it's done, though, I think, within a sales organization is it's made it even more important that, you know, Charles alluded to the sales manager, the person with probably the most important role in the sales organization for making sure execution and implementation takes place. There's more pressure on them to make more changes more often. And of course, salespeople they're humans, and humans don't normally like change. Yeah. And what people want is consistency. So the frontline sales teams who are in direct contact with customers, they want to have clear direction. They want to have consistent direction. And the problem that they've got is in the turbulent world, they're not getting what they need. So the pressure on the sales management group to ensure that the frontline teams are able to adapt and maintain their momentum and indeed their optimism and motivation in an ever-changing world.
Mm-hmm.
So the sales leadership capabilities, it really needs to be ramped up. And I think this is the area where people will succeed or struggle in the future if they don't do it well.
I agree with Paul. That's also what we see in a project that we have. And we know that the involvement of the sales leaders always has been a key success indicator. But we see that the involvement now is even higher. They are willing to participate. Yeah.
Yes.
And on the other hand, I would not really dramatize the results of last year. Okay. In the report, around 70% is not hitting the target. But let's not forget that over 55% is achieving more as 90%, right?
And there's always the question.
It doesn't mean you're not a profitable organization anymore. Okay, you have a drop in turnover, but doesn't mean that you are not profitable anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not all doom and gloom, I would say. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's a very good point, because what we've asked is performance versus budget. And we know that sometimes budgets are stretch targets. And due to all the agility, due to all the changes, budgets get revised and so on and so on. Still, I mean, maybe just putting it into perspectives for our listeners. So what we see is that like 69% of respondents fail to make their targets, fail to make budget. As you said, Nick, that doesn't mean necessarily, you know, that they have to close shop because money is running out. They can still be profitable. Nearly a third actually reported coming in below 10% behind plan. But still, sentiment is very much on the up. So it's nearly 6 on a 10-point scale. And Paul, you raised that point about, you know, stock markets, and I've checked also the DAX in Germany was 22% up over the last year. And I think stock markets are a good indicator of sentiment and of future outlook. And so it's not all doom and gloom, Nick, as you said, and I would absolutely agree with that. The question for me is, and we're now end of January, so first things in the year have already happened. We've talked about the importance of sales leaders in that scenario, mm-hmm. especially, Charles, you mentioned the first line managers as the kind of gearbox for strategy translation. Is there also a danger in being that optimistic? What's the risk of being so optimistic in your opinion?
That's a very interesting question, Alex. I will answer thanks to my view, not thanks yeah. to figures or survey.
No, we have the figures, we have in the details in the report. In life, people can read that. Yeah.
In life, not only professional life, what I observe is that optimistic people are moving.
Yes.
When the other are waiting for something. In that specific environment today, in this specific situation, personally, I prefer people moving instead of waiting. And if they move and they fail, they will readjust, they will change, but they move. I think that Nick has summarized what is the new normal. The new normal is this agility, this permanent move. This is not exactly your words, Nick, but this is what I have understood.
Yes, and I also believe we shouldn't say that everybody is very optimistic. I know that we are much aware. There are a lot of challenges, of course, but I think that people are aware of the challenges right now. That a lot of companies, certainly in the sales organizations, as I said, much more evolving to that proactive approach. That is actually the challenge that a lot of companies are, let's say, having for the moment is indeed to increase those proactive activities in the market. Yeah. And that is what sales leaders are focusing on.
Yeah.
And that is indeed, I believe, a very important issue because there is a lot of competition. There is a lot of price pressure overall, etc. The market is not booming, but we got used to it, I believe. That's a bit the sentiment. So I wouldn't say everybody is very optimistic. I would rather say people are more realistic.
Mm. Yeah. And they also see the chances. I mean, I feel we're coming out of a, you know, with COVID and everything and the economy not recovering as much as we hope to, shocks here and there. We've come from a past where everything seemed to be negative and now it's just, let's be realistic. It's not as bad as we think it is. There are opportunities. There are chances to grow.
Yeah, and what I also notice in the market and that you also see that in the study is that there is not one trend.
Yes, true.
There are several trends. There are businesses that are doing well. There are other sectors that are more suffering, etc. So you can't say there is just one trend. There are many trends.
Yeah, and even within industries, and mm-hmm. We'll get to that, I think, in a bit more detail, but even within industries, we can clearly see the gap. One of our customers, they have just now entered the DAX. They kind of pursue a strategy of sustainability, machine building for food and beverage. So you can be successful. You can be very successful. But on the other hand, obviously in Germany and obviously us being Germans, we have the most reserved outlook. We're never optimistic. You know, the struggle of the automotive industry, the backbone mm-hmm. of the German economy. We see a lot of our customers, they have adjusted. So the talks that I have with companies who are kind of suppliers to the automotive industry, they don't lament. They readjust. They go to other sectors. So, Paul, do you think sales leaders are ready to take that role?
I think sales leaders have to take that role, whether they're ready or not. And their experience, I think short-term experience may help them through. But with guidance, some form of support, and you know, leadership from, dare I say, people with slightly longer memories and certainly more senior, that they will get through it. One of the things that I believe, and Nick made the point about you know the new norm and having to be agile. One of the things about working in a an environment of constant disturbance is it generates creativity. Mm-hmm. And a number of organizations, even as the president of the United States was introducing punitive tariffs at the beginning of last year, almost immediately the companies who were being impacted were looking for new ways, new markets, looking to pivot into something different. So it's not as though business is sitting still. I think the confidence that you've probably seen, certainly in the UK market last year, a lot of it came from the fact that people have realized that our trade is international, but completely international, completely global. We suffered because of Brexit, but the optimism comes from a realization that the rest of the world is still open to trade. And
yeah,
people have got that creativity within them, partly through they have to, there's a need to do it. But I think also the creativity that's come from entrepreneurship in the first place, people who are starting businesses. I think people will leave companies and start on their own, or they'll form new alliances and they will create new opportunities. So I think the optimism, it's not just a feeling. It's based on what they see in the market. It's based on what they see in their own organizations. And I also feel that one of the biggest changes in probably many years, people, particularly in the UK, have become less trusting of the tradition. The idea that things will always be the same. That they've realized now that actually they can make their own future if they're confident and prepared to do it. So that businesses will thrive, even though they may have spent the last 100 years doing something very traditional in a very slow-moving environment. They're realizing now that everybody has to change, and therefore they'll find a new way of doing it.
And I think, Nick, you said that, maybe optimism isn't the right word, because people are not, jubilant and delusional and everything. Maybe confidence is a better word.
Well, what I sense is that people are really aware of the fact that you cannot manage external factors like legislation, what is competition doing, what is the market doing, and that we see that there is much more a focus on what can we do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Some people, they are waiting to see the way in order to move. And for some people, they move and they wait and see.
That's why, the confidence that comes from being prepared. I mean, we have this kind of maritime theme in the study about, if you don't know the weather, all you can do is prepare your ship. And I think people feel that they have done that. It's unpredictable. You never know what will happen. But Charles, as you said, if you move, you are in the advantage. You can dictate what's going to happen. And as you said before, if it fails, you readjust.
As Paul said, unfortunately, you have a authorized move when the entrepreneurship spirit is in the company.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you have people who have an individual entrepreneurship spirit, but they're not driven like that.
Yeah.
And we go back to the leadership mode. The test and learn, the try, the move, and we will make a picture, a statement of work, and we will decide if we go on or we change the direction. But in so many companies, they have had by the past a strategy, a fixed organization, and you have to move in that organization. And we know that the model which work in companies to serve this agility, this entrepreneurship is, I have a strategy and I define the several ways to make it happen. As a consequence, we have an agile organization.
And markets are so different. I mean, we've talked about that. We're used to dealing with international organizations, and selling in France is different than selling in the UK. And I imagine even selling in the Netherlands is different to selling in Belgium. Selling
in the north. Yes.
Selling in the north of Germany is different to selling in the south of Germany. And then kind of strategy is nice, but it's all about execution. And I feel, kind of summarizing so far, I feel there is a lot coming up for sales leaders. And we've stressed it, the role of sales leaders at every level of the company is becoming even more important. This is not about reporting. This is not about measuring. It's about acting. It's about changing. It's about kind of, you know, taking your crew and making it happen. But that's a nice segue into these kind of external pressures. What would you say, what's in your market or in kind of different industries? What would you say, what are the kind of not dominant factors, but what is it that you hear most in customer conversations? So I'm not kind of interested in the macroeconomic, you know, Institute of Economic Statistics, whatever view, but what is it that people talk about when you talk to them in terms of external pressures?
Well, if I can start, the UK is very clear. Our external pressure really comes from the international market and the fact that the again the changes and the things, the events in North America that have a massive impact. The change in status, shall we say, of relationships. Yes. Making a difference. So within the UK, people are now looking at long-term relationships that they've had with business partners and feeling that they can't rely anymore on what they thought was a long-standing business partner. And that thought process starts to find its way into business conversations. And the fact that people are starting to review almost everything that they're doing. But I think what will happen is, as people have started to look at risk throughout most of 2025, I can see a shift the other way. People are talking about maybe taking more risk because there's a realization that the winners of the future will need to take more of a risk. They'll need to review what they thought was clear, steady, stable, and now look at actually what happens if there is a change. Well, let's make a move before that change is forced upon us, and let's make a move so that it's in our control.
I think that's a good point. It goes back to what Nick says, you know, change is the new normal. It's just risk is what is out there. And, you know, you can take a proactive approach to managing risks by being before that.
Going back to the fundamentals of change, the environment is the first driver of change. Then in any companies, just summarizing what I hear in our discussion from for a couple of minutes, we are talking about leadership, we're talking about resilience, self-confidence, organization, and so on. Then if the first-line manager, if the sales leader does not encourage this willingness to move, does not lead as an example, if organizations do not support that, allowing people to test another way and so on, people are showing what are the stones they have in their shoes, thanks to internal factor or external factor again. Yeah. Then perhaps more than people, organizations have to become more agile also.
Yeah, and I feel like is that I don't get the proverb together, but it's about the rigid stuff and the seaweed. And if the breeze blows, then if you're agile, you don't break. But the, you know, the rigid stuff that breaks, I don't know. I don't get it together, but you have to have that agility. Nick, what is it that people talk about in Benelux, external pressures?
I don't really know it's external pressure. I know, and I agree with what Paul just said. We all know what is happening in the market. But a major trend, what I see in what we do in the kind of projects that we have with customers, is that the projects we do are much more involved in the strategy of companies.
Uh-huh.
I have a couple of examples where we clearly have a clear strategy and objectives, like selling more at a specific number of key accounts, increasing the share of wallets. So there is a much more a link between investing in the development of people and the strategic initiatives of companies.
And absolutely.
When I look at the numbers also in the survey, I noticed that in the Benelux, we have the lowest number of strategic activities. If I deep dive a little bit, this is not saying we don't have strategic
focused.
There is more focus. They're more focused. Yeah. I think that is what is going on. I think that is one of the key words of what is going on. And that's really focusing on doing the right things in the market with the right kind of customers.
Yeah. May I add something, Nick, on that? More globally, I just put out, you know, the professional environment. Every human wake up at the morning. 20, 30 years ago, when they wake up, they have some negative stimuli and some positive stimuli. For instance, this is a bad situation at work, but my kids are succeeding at school. I marry in 2 months. I have money to go for holidays and so on. Today, the proportion of negative stimuli, political, economical, personal situation, are in proportion more and much higher compared to the positive one. It impacts, you know that better than me, Nick, but it impacts the mental charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. But what I would say is, and I think that's the fundamental change, and it kind of goes in line with what we've been saying. What I would say is, it's not that rationally things have gotten worse or have gotten better, but there is a sense that it's, you know, these negative stimuli, as you call them, they're much more present. You open the newspaper, you open your phone, you go on Instagram, you go on, you know, on X, on whatever, and it's doom, 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 doom. So I feel that, and that's also in personal conversations, and that's something that I like, actually, is I feel that people have started to understand. And that's not just, you know, our clients, but as you said, also personal conversations with friends, with acquaintances. People have started to understand that there are positive things. You just need to go look for them. It is possible to have them, to feel them, to kind of motivate yourself. And it's I don't know, and I don't want to get too philosophical or anything, but just to look into the engine room of the study, obviously, when you cluster external factors, you think about the whole kind of the pest thing, you know, political, economic, social, and customers and competition. And fair enough, and you can do that, and you can read all that in the study. The funny thing is, what we did is we clustered the external factors by importance. So how many times have they been mentioned? And the interesting thing is that, you know, all these kind of very macro factors, you know, trade restrictions, exchange rate, more in the UK, obviously, financing, you know, all these very macro factors are quite low on people's minds. What's bothering them is, you know, demand volatility. So how do my customers, can they predict their demand? Price competition, hesitant customers, longer decision cycles. So very, very tangible, hands-on things. And I think in a way that's a nice sign, kind of, you know, the circle of concern versus circle of influence thing. People start to realize, what is my circle of influence? What can I actually do? And this is what I should be concerned about. Everything else, I just hope to be prepared.
But for me, Alex, this really plays into the mindset aspect of business. And again, particularly for the leaders, and very definitely for sales leaders. Because if the message, if the environment that the individual person operates in is hearing negativity, it can rub off, and it can start to inform their view of the world and their drive and desire to go and do their job to the best of their ability. And whether they're exposed to, you know, in the consumer market, people will change really very quickly based on sentiment and based on emotion. In the business-to-business world, people will be influenced by emotion. It may take a little longer, but those factors do play on their mind in the decision-making that they're involved in. And I think we have to really plug into, you know, what is it that we want our leaders to be focused on in the future? We hear more and more, particularly in the UK, around productivity, you know, the going back up to the very, very high level macro, the UK is plagued with poor productivity and poor economic growth. What happens is the people who influence businesses need to start to reshape that and say, yes, productivity is important. Sales productivity in the world of sales that we operate in is hugely important. But sales productivity and sales activity and sales strategy are hugely important because that creates the engine, as you refer to, of efficiency, but actually the willingness of the people to fix the engine where it's broken, the willingness of the people to want to do it, to want to turn up and put 100% effort in to what they see as a fading opportunity or a fading market. Yeah. That can be influenced very much by their attitude from what they've picked up externally. So yeah. Our leaders they'll earn more of their money next year on how they influence and drive and persuade and influence their people as much as how many sales visits are and how many deals are done and how big the pipeline is. Because that's the way that the future generation is moving. You know, they expect the mechanical things to work. They expect CRM. They expect AI to provide all of the things at the touch of a button.
Yes, sorry to interrupt you, just to give you some figures. On sales enablement, worldwide speaking, 50% of the investment are on tools.
Yeah.
30% on consulting, and only 20% on people.
I can dive into that when we go into the strategic initiatives, which maybe doesn't look too good for us because sales enablement, sales excellence is not high on people's agendas. But there may be a twist to that. I think, Nick, you said that a lot of more and more of our projects are connected to strategic initiatives. What does that mean? So what's the difference to earlier days?
What is the difference is that it's very often initiated by somebody on C-level in sales, and then they work together with their human resources business partner, and they're going to look for the right partner. So what means is that we talk much more as before to people on C-level because it has become a much more strategic initiative in line with the goals of the company.
Huh? And what kind of strategies you were mentioning, kind of new customer pushes, but what kind of, maybe from all of your three perspectives, what kind of strategic initiatives do we support currently? Kind of as a kind of, you know, thermometer in the market, what is it that we see that the companies do?
But you have a very good example, Alex, which is the way companies follow to integrate AI in their daily business.
Yeah.
Okay. They know that we cannot avoid AI in our professional environment.
Yeah.
And it was not true 2 years ago, but today this is a reality. The big sponsors, the CEO said, okay, we have to work on it.
Yeah.
But we tackled that challenge from a tools perspective, from a financial perspective. We aim a promise of productivity without interesting the company to the people behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So kind of leaning our successes or our future and fortune more on predictable tools.
And this is not a strategic initiative decided by the companies.
Yeah.
This is a strategic axis of development for any companies, then they are obliged to push it.
Probably. Any other kind of strategic initiatives we're supporting?
Well, we currently, I think, have several, but I think there are two that really pops up. And that one is in the agriculture role business. They are a company, they have lost some market share due to several reasons. And their focus is really winning back those customers. So what you see of the development of the capabilities of the people that are in the sales teams are really focusing on that initiative, winning back market share.
Yeah.
So there is clearly. So I'll really wrap. So one strategic project that we're working on is in agriculture. It's a company that has lost some market share due to many, many reasons. And the focus really is to win back that market share. So it's the direction of the sales activities is very clear, and the development of capabilities of people is really focusing on that strategic initiative. And we make the link between the strategic initiative as such and what does this really mean for the individual in the sales, the account management, and the key account management teams. And another one is in the IT business, where they say we need to focus much more on bigger deals. So we need to shift from, let's say, the operational kind of business to more the strategic kind of business. So it means that we need to talk to other people, that we need to talk to people on C-level. The conversation we have there is completely different than with IT specialists, etc.
So absolutely.
You clearly see in those two, let's say, projects that there is a very clear link. And I think that's a very good initiative. Well, that's a very good evolution, I must say, in our business, because it has become much more important on the agenda of companies than developing people.
Yeah.
Or just doing it, I must say. Yeah.
I feel like and Paul, you can dive into that, because that's one that we're doing together. That partner sales initiative that we have with one of our clients in the financial industry is, you know, for a long time, I've always felt that for salespeople, strategy is just some ivory tower BS, some kind of, you know, hot air. But now when we say strategic initiatives, we mean tangible things. We mean, like, you know, there need to be outcomes. It's a specific market share. Nick, you said, you know, there's a lot clearer segmentation we go for. And that's, I feel, and that is really something that I say with joy, because I think it's a good thing. Sales and sales strategy will become a lot more tangible, a lot more kind of hands-on, clear targets, clear segmentation, clear activities, good translation of goals to actual activities and the organizational backing. And I think that's a good thing.
I think I fully agree. And what we see, and as an important trend, is indeed people do expect return on investment from the projects they do, certainly in developing their people. They want to see the return on investment.
Absolutely. And I don't know, Paul, any thoughts from you on that?
Well, yeah, to Nick's point there about return on investment, what I'm seeing more and more now, and a lot of the conversations that I'm having with organizations, is actually linked to how they generate a return on their own investment in tools, in information, particularly AI. And the sort of common theme really is, how do they themselves create internal value from their investment in technology that provides data? You know, there's been a theme in some of the organizations I work with over the last few years where they talk about data is the new gold. What they're looking to do now is say, we have an absolute plethora of data. We have data everywhere. Mm-hmm. But what we need is to understand it and to interpret it and then to use it to inform our decisions. The need is for people to become, again, more strategic in their thought process about what is all of this data providing. How do we turn data into information and information into insight, and then insight into opportunity? And it's no surprise that one of the key areas where I'm seeing that focus is on how sales leaders use information that they have on their team's performance to make decisions on how to make changes. It's, again, one of the areas where, you know, we've all grown up in the last 15 years knowing that CRM is there and it exists, and if it's used properly, collects data. But are people really using it to help them to have more informed, more insightful conversations with their own people? So that inward focus, as the people I'm talking to at the moment are saying, we need that inward focus to help to shape our external focus with our customers. Nick talked about focusing on, you know, the right organization, being completely laser focused on where the opportunities lie. But that comes from having people who are able to see the opportunity, create the right resource to analyze and understand it, and then to pursue it. And that comes from using their own data to create the capability within their own teams.
maybe to kind of give that a bit more kind of frame this strategic initiative. So we've asked, I don't know, 19 different strategic initiatives. So what is it that you will focus on? And Nick, as you said, you know, the Benelux has been kind of laser focused. We have an average of you know, 6 initiatives per company. And the UK has been, you know, 8 plus initiatives per company. Yeah. So there is a kind of a variance there, which is normal, I think. And also nobody really cares about exchange rate fluctuations, but UK cares a little bit more, obviously, you know, for all kinds of different reasons. But what we've done is we put them into 4 clusters, and the first one we've called it commercial focus. So it's the kind of, you know, the cross upselling, the customer reactivation, new logo acquisition, segmentation of markets. So everything that is hands-on selling. Then we have a couple of things that we call value orientation, which is kind of redesigning the value proposition. Looking at your pricing models, introducing solution selling, bundling solutions, stuff like that. Also, obviously, sales enablement, sales excellence with CRM training tools and so on. And what we've called strategic realignment. Well, based on our discussion, I think it's not hard to guess where we find the kind of the focus of people. It's clearly in that very hands-on sales cluster. So it's all about customer focus. It's all about growth. This is where we see people putting their initiatives on. As you said, Nick, it needs to be strategic. It needs to be ROI driven. We need to see results, and we need to see quick results. The least important or the least selected is the kind of, you know, strategic realignment thing. Nobody talks about channel design a lot. And we see individual differences here and there, but at the end of the day, it feels like the age of transformation for transformation's sake is over, and things need to get hands-on. Oh. And yeah, value orientation. So the whole thing about value-based selling, kind of, Nick, I'm working with you next week on a project with, you know, the clear focus of communicating value to customers. That is a big thing. Nobody talks about sales enablement. Is that bad for us?
What I see is that we talked about strategic initiatives, but what people want really is to bring that to a tactical level.
Exactly. Yes.
What does this mean for a sales organization? What does this mean for a key account manager? Is it strategic? Is it more tactical? I believe it's the transition from strategic to tactical. And that has become very, very important. It has to do a lot with competitive positioning and focusing on the right kind of customers. Very pragmatic stuff, basically. We still see that
Absolutely. We
help a lot of organizations in the B2B environment still moving from what we call the reactive approach on purely relational and expertise selling. And I'm not saying there is anything wrong with that. If you want to be successful in sales, you also should be, let's say, powerful and strong in a more assertive approach, in a more consultative approach. And that is what I mean with strategy to also the tactical level.
Yeah.
And I think that more in that tactical level, we come in place, I must say.
Very good point, because as I said, you know, strategy is not a buzzword anymore. It's a very clear, pragmatic approach. We want to win this, and we will do this and this and this to get there, kind of thing. And I think that's good. Again, it feels like a year of action. To kind of summarize that, what would you say, what is the main kind of, we've talked a lot about the opportunities that are behind taking action and shaping your own future and shaping your own path. What is the one recommendation that you would give to your clients or to our listeners in general? If they go down that path, if they shape their future, if they invest in tangible opportunities, what is it that they should be aware of? What is it that they should not forget? What is it that is a kind of critical success factor there?
Let me start by saying this for me is extremely clear, and that is companies have made lots of investment in tools, technology, in essence, all of the things designed to improve efficiency. And improving efficiency is a great thing. But what they also need to remember is to improve effectiveness.
Yeah.
And effectiveness comes from improving the capability of the people, which starts with mindset and continues with support, guidance, mentoring, development. The effectiveness to drive the most efficient car will deliver the best result in the race that you're going to face.
Absolutely. So, and that's kind of coming back to the sales enablement thing. I was a bit worried for our 2026 when I saw that nobody kind of ranks sales enablement high. But I think, and especially for us as Mercury, we've never been kind of pure training people. Our goal has always been to make goals happen, make targets achievable. And the idea is that sales enablement, and you said that, you know, all the investments and all the tools have been done. Charles said that, you know, AI tools are on the rise. Whatever it is, it's there. It needs to be used now. And for that, you still need people. You still need organizations in general. And these organizations need to be good. You can have the fastest car if you don't have the driver. You can have the most beautiful ship, to go back to our maritime analogies. If you don't have the crew, it's going to fail. You'll never discover anything. And I think I cannot understate the role of leadership. And consistency in leadership and making sure things get done. And going back to one thing that you said, Nick, one of the words that I've heard most in conversations, especially with prospects, is we need to make the change to a proactive organization. It's proactive, proactive, proactive. Drive the opportunities, find the opportunities. We can't wait for things to happen.
Yeah, I think for me, the summary for our region is that people are realistic, they're ambitious and for 26, and they also have a plan. And that plan is mostly based on three elements. As we mentioned, agility, a very sharp focus, and indeed a competitive position.
Yeah, it's not just, that's the thing. A long time you felt like it was good to be good, or it was enough to be good. It's very much clearly now you need to be better in order to turn decisions your way. And you need to see it as not selling, but making customers buy. So kind of influencing decision-making, influencing decision cycles, but also learning to live with that uncertainty. Any last things? Let's wrap it up. Paul, what will you tell your clients to do in 2026?
Well, make sure they understand that mindset matters. And to drive results through effectiveness, not just efficiency.
And I think that's a very good summary.
So thanks everyone for listening. This has certainly been a very long but also very interesting episode. Thanks, Charles. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Nick, for your insights. If you want the full story, the data, the pressure patterns, and what year of impact really means, download our study, Sailing into 2026. You can find it on your local Mercury websites, mercury.de, mercury.nl, mercury.be, mercury.fr, and mercury.co.uk. And obviously on our global website, mercury.net. If you can't find it there, contact me and I'll be happy to get in contact with you regarding the studies. Also, do reach out for us if you want to discuss the results. But first, read it, benchmark yourself, and do pick your winning move that you are going to execute already in Q1 2026. And for that, we wish you tons of success, and we hope to hear you in the near future.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.